The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hull, and by popular demand, I'm delighted again to be able to speak to CEO Alistair Smith of Avacta, a leading life sciences firm developing innovative new cancer treatments and powerful diagnostics. So welcome, Alistair.
Hi, Paul.
Well, big congrats on this morning's terrific Phase 1A clinical trial data for the AVA6000 chemo warhead. But before we sort of dig into the details, I don't suppose you could quickly remind investors of sort of like what the drug does, what how it works, and also briefly what sort of the end goals are of the trial.
Yeah, absolutely. So AVA6000 is the first of Avacta's drugs based on the precision platform that's designed to target the chemotherapy to the tumor tissue, essentially. So precision's a small chemical modification that makes the chemotherapy harmless, effectively, when it's administered to the patient. And that modification is removed by an enzyme in the tumor, thereby releasing the chemotherapy in the tumor and sparing healthy tissue. That's the objective. There's very little of that enzyme in healthy tissue, so we expect the chemotherapy to be released predominantly in the tumor. And the phase 1A that we're talking about now is it's a safety study designed to determine the dosing regimen for the phase 2 efficacy study. And we've been evaluating the safety of AVA6000 by gradually escalating the dose in a three-weekly dosing interval. And as you say, the results have been absolutely stunning. We've got a significant reduction in the normal toxicities that you see with doxorubicin and an absence of the very serious side effects such as cardiotoxicity, even at these dosing levels, which are nearly three times the normal dose of doxorubicin. So what's also been clear from the tumor biopsies, so these are samples of the tumors that we've analyzed, is that we've got clear evidence of the release of the drug in the tumor, as well as fantastic safety.
And just, you could just talk through that efficacy, the early sort of data, because the safety seems and the tolerability seems to be really, really good. But on this is the sort of the new stuff on the efficacy side. I understand you did actually see some shrinkage in one patient of who used to have soft tissue sarcoma.
Yeah. So the safety data is remarkable, and it's way beyond what we anticipated when we started the trial. But of course, you're right. It's the efficacy that's critical, and tumor biopsies are an indication of release of the drug in the tumor. But having now what we've announced this morning, clear clinical signs of efficacy, i.e. a large reduction in the size of a tumor in a soft tissue sarcoma patient, that tells us that the precision platform is doing exactly what it was intended to do, which is target the release of an active drug into the tumor tissue and spare the healthy tissue. So yeah, as you said, the clearest efficacy signal we've got is in a soft tissue sarcoma patient who's had a very large reduction in the size of their tumor. But there's also signs of activity of the drug in other patients with sarcoma, as well as non-sarcoma. So, all in all, very, very encouraging to see clinical signs. So not just analytical measurements of tumor tissue, but clinical signs of efficacy in these patients. And that, that will help us to speed up the start of the phase 2 study and get the dosing regimen right for those patients in the phase 2 study. And I'm sure you're going to come to that shortly.
Yeah, well, just further on that efficacy side, I mean, as a layman, my understanding of doxorubicin has obviously been around for years and years and years, is that it just really sort of like stops spreading and growth. It doesn't usually shrink it, which is what obviously you've seen, and particularly in the context of the patients you use in the patient population who have probably been through lots of different, cancer treatments before they get onto the trial of AVA6000. So those haven't worked, and you've actually seen a shrinkage, which is, as you say, I'm just use your words, stunning, because it's frankly much better than my previous layman understanding of of a what this drug could potentially do.
Yeah, yes, I agree. I mean, a lot of what you've said is correct there. It does, however, depend on the particular subtype of sarcoma. So sarcoma is quite a heterogeneous cancer. So there are many different subtypes of sarcoma. So the response is actually quite dependent on the particular subtype. So you might expect to see tumor shrinkage in some tumor subtypes. But yeah, largely what you've said is correct. It's a remarkable result.
Yeah. And we're just coming then to the logic of them progressing to a cohort 7 from the cohort 6, which is already 2.8 times a stronger level than standard doxorubicin, to go to sort of 3.5 at a cohort 7. What's the sort of logic behind that?
Yeah, so we obviously, when we started the trial, we anticipated reaching a maximum tolerated dose at some point. Now, that now appears as though it may not happen. And so, you know, we've decided that cohort 7 will be the final dosing cohort in this 3-weekly study. We are, as you say, dosing, you know, quite high levels of equivalent of doxorubicin to patients. So the 3-weekly dosing is the standard for anthracyclines, as they're called, like doxorubicin. But the safety that we're seeing with AVA6000 means that we may well be able to dose more frequently, which could, and we would expect it to produce better outcomes for patients. So rather than just continue with 3-weekly dosing, we would like to obviously test the fortnightly dosing, so dosing every 2 weeks. And if that is, you know, if that's going to give us the best chances of success in our phase 2 study next year, then we'd like to evaluate that. And that's what we're going to do in a short study, to evaluate fortnightly dosing at the US sites. So the FDA approval process to do that is quite short. So we expect to begin that study shortly and complete that fortnightly study around the middle of next year.
Okay. And you'll run it in parallel with the cohort 7, will you? Or to initiate it, yeah.
Correct.
Okay, fine. And in sort of top level, this additional study, is it to sort of identify the different variables and how you might mix it in terms of the dosage level, the frequency, whether it's 2-weekly or 3-weekly, and also the number of cycles that it can you can use it for, to get sort of the optimum treatment regime for phase 2 that they then sort of, like, you know, progress?
Yeah, no, exactly. It's all about determining the optimum dosing regimen for phase 2 to make, you know, the highest possible chances of a successful phase 2, which will be designed as a registrational study, so a study that can get the drug approved in soft tissue sarcoma.
Okay. And is there going to be some more sort of like clinical efficacy data being sort of issued, or likely to be issued, at the end of this year once the cohort 7 is completed?
Yeah, so our plan is to give a detailed data release later in Q4, when we've had a chance to fully analyze that data. So I don't have a date for that yet, but yes, before the end of the year, we'll provide a detailed data release, certainly up until the end of cohort 6 and as much of cohort 7 as possible.
Okay. And then presumably, you know, you've got the efficacy data looks very strong, and then the safety data is, you know, very, 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 you know, tolerable, very good. Putting those together, does it have any sort of broad read across for the rest of the sort of the precision platform? Because as you say, it does seem as though that area of science, the therapeutics do seem to be doing what it's supposed to.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the data that we have from the 6000 study is a strong validation of the precision platform. You know, while AVA6000 is an interesting clinical and commercial asset for us, but the real prize is being able to apply the precision platform to a broad range of chemotherapies, and now we have, as you say, clinical data that really strongly validates the platform. It does what it says on the tin, if I can put it in the vernacular. It targets the release of an active chemotherapy into the tumor, and spares the healthy tissue largely from exposure. So, you know, we've already talked about data with preclinical data with AVA3996, which is at the preclinical stage, obviously, but it's showing the same sort of targeted release in the models that we're using. So yeah, there's absolutely a read across to a much broader range of precision targeted chemotherapies. Mm.
And there's sort of quite a few then the tumors which are sort of like FAP upregulated that would be really ideal for this type of prodrug.
Yeah, very much so. You know, some of the larger indications like prostate cancer, lung, breast cancer, and others like esophageal and salivary. So sarcoma is high up there. But yeah, there's a you know, quite a large number of cancers indications that have very high expression and activity of FAP over and above the normal baseline.
Good. And then I'm just going to, the final question, I'm going to put my layman's hat on here. If you get, you know, sort of strong results coming out mid next year from this sort of like, you know, extra study, and this is sort of like dovetail with the efficacy and safety data at the end of the year, et cetera. With that, I mean, if I was a, you know, a very large biopharma and needing to replenish my sort of pipeline, would that sort of like potentially give, you know, a factor optionality in terms of deciding how it wants to sort of like, whether it wants to self-fund, whether it wants to sort of get, if somebody was wanted to come in to support the actual phase two, or if you'd ever needed a phase three sort of program, would it give you that optionality, do you think, or how do you see that going forward?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And absolutely. As you can imagine, we're seeing an uptick in commercial interest driven by the clinical data that's emerging. So, you know, it's certainly we are prioritizing non-dilutive sources of capital. And I think that's what you're getting at there, either through partnership or licensing. So, you know, so from a funding perspective, we're in, you know, we're in no rush to raise capital at the moment. There's a lot of optionality, as you put it.
Yeah. And I'm guessing also one of the beauties of today's excellent clinical trial data is that because you're replacing your previously planned phase 1b study with a shorter study in terms of that frequency of dosing, then that presumably, say, shortens the development time, but also reduces the ultimate cost of development.
Yeah, good point. It you know, shortens the development time, brings brings the phase two study hopefully into 2024. So, you know, we didn't anticipate starting that until early 25. But yes, the short fortnightly dosing study is much simpler than the 2 or 3 arm phase 1b that we'd previously been thinking about. So yeah, it's considerably lower cost, which obviously makes the cash runway considerably longer.
Well, that, absolutely fabulous news. So big congrats again, Alistair, and look forward in touching base perhaps towards the end of the year when you get the data for the end of the cohort 7.
Fantastic. Thanks, Paul.